Good evening. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are Kingston's campus and community radio station. The time is now 7 o'clock on August 2nd, 2017. We're broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Online at CFRC, on Cogeco Cable 282, and via our Android and iPhone apps. You are listening to CFRC Prison Radio. We come on the air every Wednesday at 7 o'clock over CFRC. We cover a variety of prison issues and prisoner perspectives. Our signal reaches Collins Bay Institution, Millhaven, Bath, Joyceville, and Cape Vincent in upstate New York. And thank you to those people who recently confirmed for us that you can hear CFRC at Millhaven and Bath Institution. I have an announcement to make about an upcoming special broadcast that we are hosting. As many of our listeners will know, August 10th, 2017 is Prisoners Justice Day. And as we do every year, we're going to have a special broadcast. This year it runs from 5 until 10 p.m. on Thursday, August 10th. This is the release. On Thursday, August 10th, CFRC 101.9 presents its 9th annual broadcast for Prisoners Justice Day, remembering all those who have died behind bars. And for the first time, this broadcast will be shared by CJAI 92.1 FM, which is Amherst Island Radio. 2017 marks the 43rd annual Prisoners Justice Day, which began in commemoration of Eddie Nalin, a prisoner who bled to death in the segregation unit of Millhaven Prison on August 10, 1974. More than four decades later, upwards of 200 prisoners die in custody every year in Canada alone. So, this August 10th, from 5 to 8 p.m., CFRC will air interviews, news, features, and a memorial piece about prisoners and prison conditions. Then, from 8 to 10 p.m., you can tune in, and you'll hear messages and music requests by and for prisoners and their loved ones and supporters. And again, this broadcast will be simulcast, meaning it will go over the air at the same time on CJAI 92.1 FM and stream online at cfrc.ca. So we are currently accepting your song requests, submissions, phone calls, for calls from home at the end of the month, as well as this special broadcast. So here's how you can get in touch with us. You can phone us at a voicemail that we have set up at 613-329-2693. There we accept your letters, song requests, messages, news tips, all those kinds of things. You can email us at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. You can find our archives online at cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com. We're on Facebook in the group Calls from Home. And of course, you can send us a letter. Our address is CFRC Prison Radio, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K as in Kilo, 7, L as in Lima, 3, N as in November, 6. And tonight, if you want to give us a call while we are airing our interview, you can phone our request line at 613-533-2372. That is 533-CFRC. So tonight I'm excited to share a conversation that I taped just last weekend in Ottawa with Jared Shook. If you listen to the show, you'll probably know the name Jared Shook because he was a regular contributor to the show while he was incarcerated at Collins Bay Institution over the last 3 or 4 years, I would say. So him and I got to know each other pretty well. I was on his visiting list. We became friends, and we worked together on a lot of projects in town. So this was taped 1 year since he got parole. He's now in Ottawa and doing well. And yeah, we shared a few laughs. We talked about what parole's like. We discussed some of the prison justice projects that Jared's taken on since moving to Ottawa and his general perspective on life. So without further ado, here is my conversation slash interview with Jared Shook. This is Rico with CFRC Prison Radio. I'm sitting here with Jared Shook, free man?
Freer.
freer man out here in Ottawa?
Man is born free, but everywhere he goes, he is in chains. Some of them literal, some of them figurative.
So we're going to talk a bit about parole and what's going on with Prisoner's Justice Day and other sort of, I guess, what do you call it, prison justice work happening in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Just what's up? How you been?
Well, it's actually been 1 year, this week actually, since I got released from Collins Bay Institution on the minimum side. And that was after the better part of 5 years incarcerated since 2012. Yeah, I've just been reflecting a lot on where I was at a year ago and some of the things that I've been able to accomplish. And some of the life that I've been able to live a little bit freer since I've been out. Even actually, I was just thinking before we met today for our first visit in a while. I think the last visit we had was in a CSC visiting room. And I was thinking about how anxious I used to get before our visits because of all the security protocols involved and going down to the visiting room, and there's a microphone there, and the guards are there, and the cameras are there, and, you know, it's just not natural at all, and you want to be present and have a natural social interaction with somebody, and it's almost impossible under those conditions. And then the thing that used to make me most anxious was leaving afterwards and potentially getting selected, not every time, for a strip search. And how humiliating that was. And, you know, today I didn't feel any of those things, right? I just knew I was coming to see you. We were going to meet up at a coffee shop. And I felt good. You probably can notice even in how I'm interacting with you and just how, like, more composed, I guess, I am.
Relaxed.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Because I would always be, like, talking to you in the visiting room, and I'd be sort of looking around and, like, just anxious, right? And like trying to be present, but it's so hard under those conditions, right? I never stay in the halfway house if I don't have to. In fact, like I have a little space there. It's actually one of the few halfway houses where they give you your own space. And even if I have work to do or I don't have anywhere that I necessarily need to be, I can't sit in there. Like, I get really anxious and I go and do my work and I'll sit in a coffee shop, and it's just nice to have people around. And sort of even if it's just a social background, because I associate it with that same sort of space, right? And it really wreaks havoc on you.
What has parole been like?
Parole. Well, parole is a prison in itself. You're on conditional supervision in the community. So it's this weird thing because in one sense, you know, you're in the quote-unquote free world, but your chains or your shackles, if you will, are invisible to everybody around you, but you can still feel them very tight. So I think, like, in advance of getting out, a lot of prisoners, myself included, sort of envision, like, what life is going to be like when you get out, and think about how great it's going to be able to get up and make a choice of where you want to go and who you want to see, and just enjoy basic liberties that we sort of all take for granted every day. And then you get out, and depending on where you are, I'm in the city of Ottawa, and I'm not going to say that the parole officer that I have or the parole office that is supervising me has been extremely punitive with me, but much like many other parolees, I'm on a pretty short leash, right? So when I first got to the halfway house, I had to check back every 4 hours physically. I'm expected to call the halfway house and let them know every time I change a location. Got a curfew that I have to follow, which has finally made it up to 12 o'clock at night.
What was it when you started?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
And with 4 hour check-ins as well. Mm-hmm. So actually, funny story, funny little anecdote for you. So I was at a poetry slam at a place called Origin Arts Community Center, and it's actually one of the first poetry slams that I attended. And so I got up and I did my first poem, which was Inquiry, about the call for an inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women. And people really enjoyed that poem, and it was really cool to be in that space because poets, you know, are always a motley crew of people and just a very accepting crowd. And I just felt really good to be out and free, and sharing my poetry is something I've been thinking about for a long time, and I was happy to be there. But I was on that 4-hour interval for check-ins, and it was getting close to 7 o'clock, and I was due back for 8, and I was waiting to go up to perform my second poem. And they call everybody up at random, and they called my name second to last. And at this point, basically, the time was creeping on, and I realized that if I didn't ask to go up, that I was going to miss my time frame. So I stopped the person who was emceeing the poetry event, and I said, "Hey, like, do you mind if I go next? Because like I really have somewhere I need to be." And they're sort of like, "Well, you know, we have a process." Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Look, like, just hear out my next poem and maybe you'll understand, like, what's at stake." So I got up there and I shared a poem about Prisoner's Justice Day, What is Prison? And which sort of outlines, you know, some of my thoughts and reflections on prisons and its relevance in society and its irrelevance in society more so. And I finished the poem, and like everyone was like, "Holy crap!" Like I could see their faces. They were like, "Well, that was different, right?"
Yeah.
And then I basically dropped the mic and just left. And I didn't really. I said, "Look, I really got to go. Like I have to be somewhere." Sort of like Cinderella, like, I turn into a pumpkin, right?
Yeah.
And so I left my glass slipper behind, and I made it back. And then I got a Facebook message later on from the poetry collective, and they said this is a slam poetry event. They said that I had won the slam, but it was just a funny way to exit. But that was because I had to be on time, like, and if I wasn't there, that would have been a violation and potentially could get sent back for that, right?
3, 2, 1,
speak!
What is prison? I do not know, but I'll tell you what it isn't. It isn't life, it isn't living, nor more than existing, unless, of course, you're resisting, for somehow in that daily struggle to survive, you confront spiritual death and recognize you're alive, heart beating and breathing still, feeling and thinking, afraid of what? The ship sinking? It's already sunk. What's left is the man in the mirror you confront. So what will it be? Are you happy to be another category, what they expect, or would you rather have some self-respect? If you have a voice, you have a choice. And I'm not saying just making some noise, there's enough of that already. What I mean is use your head, see, and creativity. And even though you will face opposition, your opponents will be forced to respect a well-thought-out position. And yes, there will be haters. There always are. It's a sign of success, and it's kind of a test, and they matter the less the more you weather their storm and absolutely refusing to conform. So what can I do, you might ask? I say that's a good question. Start with that question and then search your heart. What seems to matter? Choose one thing and take action. Write something. Watch their reaction. If you can't type, that's all right. Use a pencil and pad. Store your thoughts somewhere. You'd be surprised how many you have. And if writing is not your thing, that's fine too. It's just one of the things that you can do. Pick up a book. Engage your mind. You'll be amazed what you will find. And you don't have to read to resist, but a little Karl Marx would sure assist. In this struggle that we call class, we will regain consciousness as these days pass, because we harbor unique knowledge, the kind they do not teach inside a college. It's experiential and so essential to those inside ivory towers. They call it empirical. Mm-hmm. Well, here in this medium, we call it lyrical, but I digress. The point is to refuse to be oppressed by any sort of oppressive regime, and while they regress towards the mean, we must progress by any means possible, permitting that we've done our thinking to prevent ourselves from sinking to their level when resisting. But all the same, we must respect this game for what it is, for there are winners and there are losers. Failure to act today could mean tomorrow we are useless. So on this day when we collect our thoughts and pay respects to those who fought and fell victim to an unnatural death and an unnatural system that exploits people's rest by keeping them caged and locked in a cell, solitary confinement, a literal hell, whatever the conditions of prison might be, they must be resisted, this PJD. Yes. And how do you resist something so inhuman? By being human.
Yeah.
Woo! Woo!
So it's just in many different ways, it keeps you on a short leash. It can disrupt your social life. You know, I have to, if I want to visit somebody's house, I have to go through an interview process, and you don't necessarily want to bring everybody you meet into that side of your life. And so it can make your social life a little bit restricted. And even just having to call and let the halfway house know where you're going to be at a particular time. If you're with people and they don't know your story and you're standing there and all of a sudden you have to call the halfway house. But what it really is, in a thousand different ways every day, is a reminder or a direct statement from the system of your outcast state, your position, right? Because you have to reflect on that every time you call and say, hey, it's Jared, I'm calling in from point A, I'm going to point B. You know, you can't shake off your status as a convict, right? They remind you in a thousand different ways every single day. So those have been a struggle, but I got to work with what I have, and so far it has been really good.
In other ways, like as you were speaking about applying for jobs or trying to get an apartment, how has parole affected that for you?
Well, it's not really, like, I can't really blame it so much on parole, so much as like a more wider statement about where the public are at with regards to people who have criminal records. And maybe not even so much criminal records, but also people who may have gaps in their employment history or their rental history, and that might actually have nothing to do with the fact that they've been criminalized, although in many cases it does, right? So in my case, when I first got out, I was looking for work, and I was searching for all different types of jobs, mostly like jobs that I'd done in the past that I thought were pretty easy to get, like at call centers and like doing sales and things like that. So the first place I looked was this call center, and I went through the application process, and like the interviewer told me obviously that I would be perfect for the job because I'd done that work so many times, and she had me read the script in front of her, and she said I had a great voice for the phone, and she thought that I would do wonderfully. And then she reviewed my application where I'd answered honestly that I have a criminal record, and she said we'll follow up with you tonight. And I followed up with her, and she said I'm very sorry, but we can't give you the job. She didn't say why, and then I pressed her a little further, and she admitted that it's a company policy that they can't hire anybody with a criminal record. So that was my first sort of not getting a job that I knew I was capable of, and that they had told me I would have been able to do the job just fine, but it was more about my status as having been criminalized. And then so I kept going about that, and actually shortly after I ended up breaking my foot. So I was actually out on crutches looking for work. I'm cruising all around the city every day. You know, I've got this crutches and a broken foot, hobbling around. Yeah, I wasn't cruising. I was hobbling. You know, and I'm sitting there just like grinding it out, trying to find a job. And so I found this company that does fundraising, and like they basically stop people on the street. You've probably all seen them out and been annoyed by them. They ask you for money to donate to World Vision or Habitat for Humanity. Yeah. This one was with World Vision. So they had me in for the training. I did an interview. They wanted me again. They said, yo, you'd be great for this. You've got the right personality, everything we're looking for. We like your attitude. So I did the training, and then they sent me home with this two-hour online training that I was supposed to do. I'm supposed to become entirely familiar with the World Vision platform and like what they do in the world and how they improve lives abroad. But one of the things I had to become familiar with was their mission statement, which was sort of this take on being rooted in the teachings of Jesus Christ and pursuits of social justice and reductions of inequalities and egalitarianism. And then they sent me this form right after I finished the training, which was for backcheck.com, which is this online website that companies use to do criminal record checks on people. And you basically have to voluntarily blatantly give up your information to them. So I filled out that form, and then obviously I knew they were going to have an issue with my criminal record, so I sent them this lengthy letter basically saying, hey, like, I appreciate that you probably might have an issue with this, but here's where I'm at today, and here's some of the things that I've done. And, you know, I'd like to be given a chance. He said I'd be good for the job. And they sent back a thing again saying, no, we're very sorry. We really are very sorry, but it's a company policy. And I thought that was really funny in reference to the World Vision mandate of being rooted in the teachings of Jesus Christ. And I wondered how that squares up with their ideas about redemption mm-hmm. and social justice. And one of the things I found that was probably the biggest takeaway for me, though, in reflecting on, like, the challenges that people face is, like, here I was, and I feel like I'm in a privileged sort of circumstance because, A, I am recently a graduate from Laurentian University. I obtained a degree in sociology, so I was able to attach that to my resume, and I'm currently a student at the University of Ottawa in criminology, which is sort of like a way of reducing some of the stigma. And I feel like I'm fairly articulate, and if you want to say present, I can present well. And, like, even with those sort of protective factors, people weren't willing to give me a chance at that point anyways. So, I mean, it's a tough go in that respect. And, I mean, you have to keep plowing forward. You can't use that as, like, a reason to give up. I eventually did end up finding some work, particularly at the university as a research assistant, and that has been really good for me. And I found another job as well that I'm doing part-time now. But those are some of the challenges.
Pretty much the same experience with landlords too?
Yeah, so renting is another difficult thing because, I mean, obviously if you don't have rental history, you're perceived as being untrustworthy, and usually they're asking for employment references as well, and not just current employment references but previous employers, which to the landlord indicates a certain amount of stability, I guess. And yeah, so several places that I looked at, I wasn't able to rent from them. They didn't directly state that it was because of my criminal record.
But, did they know you had a criminal record?
So, a couple of the places didn't. They just knew that I had a poor a gap in my rental history and a gap in my employment, which couldn't necessarily be explained. And also, they want to know, who are you currently renting from? And obviously, I'm not renting from the halfway house. But a couple of them, actually, I was forthcoming with them. I said, look, I know you're going to ask these questions on the application, and here's my situation. And here's some of the things that I've done. So I provided them a copy of my CV, and I provided them a copy of my current employment situation to show that I would be capable of paying the rent, and some of the things I've done in the while to change and get my life back together. And, you know, most of them just basically said that was just something they couldn't get around. One guy just said, don't even bother continuing to fill out the application. Another guy, I won't say his name, but he came from a place where you would think that there would be a little bit more understanding. He had a background in psychiatry, actually, and he even asked me to provide him an outline of sort of the things I've been doing since I've been out to keep myself on a good path, which I felt reluctant to, but felt I also needed to do if I wanted to get the place, and I provided
that
to him.
It's very intrusive for a landlord.
Yeah, it's a lot more information than your average... than you would expect, right? And so I gave this information to him thinking, okay, like, I went this far now. I provided all of the other information, and then on top of that, I've done this self-disclosure. And then they still didn't rent to me, you know? And so afterwards, you're thinking to yourself, well, now there's 5, 6, 7, 8 people around the city who you don't know, who you've given them freely, this very personal information. You know, obviously you don't know what they're going to do with it, or so it's a tough process to go through, but that's stigma, right? And that's what I mean when I say in 1,000 different ways every day, you know, you wear what some people would call the consequences of what you did, but you wear the punishment continues, right? And I don't know when it's going to be over necessarily, or when, if there's going to come a place in time where in the eyes of society I'll necessarily be redeemed. When I look back in the mirror, I know who I am and I know the work that I've done. And I know, you know, what I'm about today and what I want to do with my life. So, you know, that's good enough for me. But when you need a place to live, you need a place to live. And when you need a job to pay for the place you're going to live, you got to be able to get that, right? And if guys coming out or women who are being released can't provide for those things, well, I mean, their options become limited, right? So I think it's an important thing that we start thinking about. Reentry is a big thing. Getting back into society is a big thing for people who have spent years in prison, and these are some of the barriers that they face. So.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ship. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs, redemption songs.
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We got to fulfill the book. So won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs.
Redemption Song. That is a Bob Marley tune originally. That is a Johnny Cash and Joe Strummer cover. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. This is CFRC Prison Radio, and we are going to continue with our conversation this week with Jared Shook, speaking about the last year of his life since he got parole, some difficulties had getting places of work and a place to stay, and some of his prison justice projects, including for Prisoners Justice Day this year. Hope you enjoy.
Talk a bit about some of the prison justice work you've been doing in Ottawa since you've been here.
Yeah, so there have been a couple of things. One of them is in relation to a plan on the part of the Ontario government to build a new jail here in the city to replace the Ottawa-Carleton Detention Centre, which anybody who knows anything about OCDC is. It's been described as a hellhole, and it is a shithole, much as all prisons are shitholes. Basically, there have been numerous incidents that have occurred there, a lot of violence. Women have given birth in cells there, left unintended. There have been deaths. It's overcrowded. Majority of the people there are legally innocent. There are a lot of problems. So it's seen as a political problem on the part of the Ontario government, so their political solution to that problem is to just build a new jail, with the logic, their logic is that it will solve the problems that are currently there. And if we look at how these sort of attempts to resolve those sorts of problems have unfolded in Ontario over recent years, new prisons don't solve problems that old prisons created or that prisons themselves create fundamentally. So the Toronto South Detention Center is a great example of that.
Yeah, I was thinking of that.
The Windsor Jail, the new jail they built in Windsor, is an example of that. And in fact, actually, those places have more problems and more bed space. So this jail is going to hold 725 people, which is about 225 more than the OCDC currently holds. And they're claiming that people will get better mental health treatment and programs, and it won't be as crowded, and they'll be able to manage the prison population better.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, the reality is they should take the $500 million or so that they're going to spend building this prison and devote it towards community-based responses to harms that prevent people from ending up there in the first place. And one of the big flaws I see with the argument that people are going to go to prison to get mental health treatment is that they shouldn't have to go to prison to get mental health treatment, right? And I think right now, actually, I would think that some of the judges are maybe reluctant to want to send somebody to OCDC because of the shitty conditions that are there. And if they build a new jail, then maybe the courts won't feel quite as reluctant, right? And that they see it as a catch-all for problems that exist in the community that should be funded and resourced. We're opposed to that idea here in Ottawa, and so we've been organizing and collecting our thoughts and strategizing ways to resist that project. Currently working with the Punishment Criminalization and Punishment Education Project, which is a collective of academics and activists who organized together from the University of Ottawa and Carleton, as well as a campaign that's been started up, made up of students from the University of Ottawa, and Justin Pichet, professor at the University of Ottawa. It's the NOPE campaign, which is No on Prison Expansion. And through their research, they were able to identify several provincial prison infrastructure projects across Canada that have already been planned or are on the table. They're taking a critical stance towards those projects, and arguing, in light of the available evidence that we have about how prisons don't solve community-based problems or harms, calling for a prison construction moratorium, and obviously with the plan to build a new prison here in Ottawa, that fits in with what we're calling for. Ironically enough, both Justin and three students working on that project, Jasmine Bear, Tanisha Green, and Anna Kovacic, appeared before a Senate Committee on Human Rights in Prison that has been struck and tabled their report and their research to them and how to talk about prison infrastructure projects and some of the problems associated with them and where those monies could be better deployed towards restorative justice or community-based responses or community reinvestment. And the very next day they announced that they were going to be building this new jail here in Ottawa. So, been involved with that. And then, obviously, we've got Prisoners Justice Day coming up. So we've been planning and organizing a couple events. On August 6th, we're going to have a panel discussion with some local organizers here who have been very vocal in their expressions of opposition to the treatment that individuals here in this city, or when they've been placed abroad, but people who are from the city, have received from law enforcement. One of those being Solomon, who Justice for Soli's campaign basically will be speaking, talking about that case. He died an unnatural death in custody at Lindsay Jail at the hands of the guards. Abdirahman Abdi, who was killed by the Ottawa police. His people and supporters will be there talking about that unnatural death. And we'll have former prisoners speaking, and anybody who really wants to talk about the role of prisons and punishment in our lives. And specifically, we'll be focusing on unnatural deaths in custody. And then on August 10th, we'll be meeting for a rally and a protest that's going to start down at City Hall here in the city of Ottawa. We'll be making our way down to the Department of Justice, and we'll finishing up at the CBC studio on Spark Street, and just be gathering together and acknowledging unnatural deaths in custody, and giving a voice to people who spent time in prison and their loved ones, or anybody who, for that matter, who wants to make a contribution.
It's an interesting decision to include people who have died at the hands of, say, the police, because Prisoner's Justice Day often really focuses on the prison. So are you intentionally trying to make connections between unnatural deaths at the hands of sort of any point within the justice system? Is that kind of the idea? Make connections across different movements and this kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the inclusion of the organizers and supporters, for sure, the overlap exists, that essentially that is brutality at the hands of the state, right? Whether it's a correctional officer in a correctional facility or the police in the community, they all derive their power from the same source. Mm-hmm. So I think there's no sense in drawing any boundaries between those events. They're all connected struggles. It's in our view, I would say the same logic of the state that leads to those sorts of actions and events. So yeah, we're open to those dialogues existing.
I would agree.
Yeah,
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you know if Prisoner's Justice Day is marked or observed in OCDC at all?
I haven't personally been able to form any relationships with anybody who's currently going into OCDC.
Yeah.
Given my experience,
yeah.
I would, if I were to take a guess, I would say for sure there will be some acknowledgement, but there's always a sort of a difference between the federal and the provincial level in terms of what people in those spaces know about Prisoners' Justice Day. And I think we've talked about this in years past.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the history behind Prisoners' Justice Day sort of is something that every year gets passed on to successive, you know, we'll say generations of prisoners, right? So in provincial prisons, you've got people who are coming in and out who may have not had as much contact with prisons or may not know as much about the history behind Prisoners' Justice Day. So it really just depends on whether or not people who have that knowledge seek to pass it on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say for sure that there will be some people there who will acknowledge Prisoners' Justice Day and do so by refusing to eat and not doing any work or attending any programs in the institution.
And you're also involved with the Journal of Prisoners on Prisons.
Yeah.
So you want to talk a bit about that too?
Yeah, well, it's actually been some interesting work that I've been involved with since I've been at the University of Ottawa as an editorial assistant for the Journal of Prisoners on Prisons. Actually, through a directed research course that I was a part of under the supervision of Justin Pichet, I and another student, Bridget McInnes, in light of Justin Trudeau's professed commitment to quote unquote sunny ways.
It's a lot of hedging.
It's a lot of hedging. I hope my sarcasm came across. In light of that sort of imagery that he is trying to present to the public, and also his mandated review of all criminal justice, criminal injustice, we could say, laws, policies, and practices that were brought in from 2006 to 2015 under the Conservative government. In light of that review, we thought, as the JPP, that it would be important that prisoners' voices themselves ought to be included as part of that discussion, rather than a bunch of bureaucrats or parliamentarians sitting around talking about how things could change. So we did a Canada-wide consultation with prisoners. We mailed out letters to every institution at all security levels and asked prisoners what do they see as being the main issues and what have been the impact on their lives of those laws, policies, and practices. And more importantly, what would they like to see moving forward and what types of social action could people in the community engage in to address them? And not that we weren't expecting a fairly large response. The response that we did receive was overwhelming. We received back well over 50 responses. Some of the letters, nearly 20 pages long, very thoughtful, very well organized, very well articulated submissions that spoke directly to what the main issues are. And the response was, like I said, so overwhelming, so immense, that we actually decided to dedicate an entire double issue, the next double issue of the Journal of Prisoners on Prisons, to those responses. So each submission is going to be published in its entirety, along with a paper that I co-authored with another student entitled More Stormy Weather or Sunny Ways, A Forecast for Change According to Prisoners of the Canadian Carceral State. And essentially, the responses that we got back after we thematically analyzed the letters revealed to us some consistent messages about what the main priorities are. So we saw a lot of talk about changes with regard to sentencing, parole, parole conditions, the fact that old age pension has been taken away from those 65 and older. Of course, the prison pay cuts that were introduced, the 30% deduction for room and board, as well as the elimination of incentive pay for Corcan workers. We saw discussions about mental health, about physical health care. We saw a lot of responses that spoke to staff culture and case management culture. So we were able to organize or really summarize the responses that we received into this paper and really tried to give a voice to prisoners, so that way when the government does ultimately conduct its review, that information can be used in making decisions. So we're hoping to get that forward to a Senate Committee on Human Rights in Prison that has been struck and meeting. And we're hoping to table the entire issue of the journal along with the paper that we've written to go with it. But ultimately, I think we accomplished a couple of things with this. One is we did what we set out to do, which was facilitate an opportunity for prisoners to contribute their voices to this discussion. And two, that information is out there and available for other people to work with now. And it's sort of a big question that I bring up for myself when I think about this, which is a very reformist enterprise. And what we know is that reforms don't necessarily solve the problem. All we can do with these sorts of things is maybe improve things for people in the short term now. But at the end of the day, the prison remains what it is. And so we're, in addition to thinking about ways that we could resolve some of the harms that were brought about as part of Stephen Harford's Tough on Crime agenda, we're fully aware that issues of prison transcend that agenda. The very nature of the prison needs to be questioned, and that's something that we'll be thinking about as well.
Reflecting on sort of being inside and challenging prison from while you were incarcerated at Collins Bay.
Yeah.
When you think about that now, what kind of work and support and relationships do you think would be a good way forward for people out in the community to sort of pursue? Like, kind of what is to be done, I guess, is what I'm asking. Like, what do you think would be a good step in addition to these other projects that are going on that sound really good?
You know, I wrote a piece a while back about Omar Khadr, and the piece was called Undelivered Mail, ? It was about a letter that I had sent to Omar Khadr when I was in Millhaven Institution. And at that time, I was expressing some support for him in that circumstance as somebody who also has spent the better part of my adult life in prison. And I offered him some resources that I knew about to access education, if that were something that he would be interested in. And to this day, I still don't ever know if he actually got the letter or if my name just ended up on a CSIS watch list somewhere. But at the end of that paper, I concluded that, you know, our cases are not analogous in any way, but we did share having spent our entire adult lives under the authority and supervision of the state in one form or another. And I left the question open of, now that he was back out in the community at that time, what does someone like that need? And I said, if I thought about it, what they need is love. And, you know, I know the idea of what love is sort of this abstract thing. But essentially, people need to just be seen for who they are and what they are, human beings. We're complex people. We're not either good or bad. I think if everybody looks back on their own life, we've made some good choices, we've made some bad choices. But the way that politics has shaped people's thinking about crime and criminals is to other them and to put them in this separate category. And it, just as I talked about earlier, in a thousand different ways every day, you're reminded of that outcast state. But people just need to be accepted and seen for who they are. And I don't think that that means that people don't have to also earn back some credibility. But I think people need to be given a shot. They need to be given an opportunity. They need to be shown love. They need to be shown that they're worthy. They need to be accepted. I've been really lucky in that I've had several people who have come into my life who have shown me that sort of love. And in the face of some of the things that I've had to go through and struggle against, they've reminded me that I have worth and that I have value. And I mean, I don't know how you put that into a platform or a program or a policy. I think it's just the right thing to do. And so I really believe that's what people need, right?
Is there anybody in particular that you're going to be thinking about this Prisoner's Justice Day?
Yeah. You know, I got out last year, and I often would Google Collins Bay Institution. Just kind of wondered what was going on there still sometimes. And I did a Google search, and a name came up, Death in Custody, Rick Foster. I knew Rick. And he always encouraged me when I was on my way to getting out. I knew him for years, actually. He was a prisoner. He was in minimum before I left, but I knew him at different security levels, and he'd spent the majority of his life in prison, save some time that he was out. And I saw that name come up, that he had died. I didn't know the exact circumstances, and I've talked to some people, and they've speculated about what it was, and to this day, I actually don't know what it was. But that really hit me, because I remember right before when I was getting parole, some of the things that he said to me. And he said once to me that I gave him hope.
And I know he was working on trying to get himself back out to the street. And I don't know what afflicts people and what makes them tick. I know what makes me tick, and I can't say that every decision I've made in my life has always been necessarily rational, or that I can even account for why I did some of the things that I've done. And I don't know exactly what brought him back to prison again, or where his head was at. But I'll be thinking about him, for sure. I almost didn't believe it when I saw the headline come up. I thought, oh, it must be another person with the same name, but no, it was him. But I mean, I'll be thinking about, like I said, all those who've died unnatural deaths in custody. Prison is not the place to close your eyes for the last time. It's an unnatural death. And I mean, you know, since the very first Prisoner's Justice Day, that's really what Prisoner's Justice Day has been about, right? Edward Nalin, Bobby Landers, you know, we've got too many deaths to remember since then. Obviously, some of those have occurred in the community too, at the hands of the state, such as Abdi, Soli, Lindsay, Guy Langlois recently, you know, Ashley Smith. So I guess the question is, what are we learning from these deaths? Are they just in vain, right? And I think that's something that society really needs to think about. Because many of them could have been prevented. And we can start having a conversation about how we can go about prevention. But I'm hoping that Prisoner's Justice Day will open up some of those conversations.
Is there anything you want to say to the guys at Collins Bay or other institutions that will be listening to this show who are fasting and thinking about these issues today?
I do. At our organizing meeting for Prisoner's Justice Day, some of the folks here were asking if we could come up with a theme. I said, freedom is a must. And everybody sort of stopped, and I saw them reflect on that statement. And sort of a statement I think that emerged out of J-Unit in Millhaven. And I've had some friends who spent too many years in that place. And it's one of the worst places to be. But freedom is a must. And for the guys on the inside, sometimes that's all you've got to hold on to every day, is the idea that one day you will get free. And I want the men and women who are listening to this broadcast, who are inside, to keep fighting for your own freedom. Don't give up. And we're out here fighting for your freedom too. And in a lot of ways, we all have to fight for our own freedom in many different ways every day. Freedom is a must. And I think we all just need to remember that.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I just wanted to sort of reflect on our meeting up here again. Mm-hmm. Sort of, it's been about a year. Mm-hmm. And just again, you know, I am very grateful for the relationships that I was able to build while I was inside with people in the community who organized and struggled with us. And like, you were certainly a part of that. And Epic and the prison industrial complex and the prison radio show. You know, in so many different ways, I've talked about this before, but by providing that sort of support, whether visits or phone calls or, you know, facilitating, getting things to the media, publishing things, organizing in the community, those created meaningful experiences for me as an individual that I wouldn't have otherwise had. And in a lot of ways, it did help me survive. And it did make a difference. And, you know, some of the struggles, sometimes you look back and you wonder, like, did you win? or what is a win, right? But I think the fact that we're sitting here today in the quote-unquote free world having this conversation and
a beautiful day.
On a beautiful day, that's a win, right? But yeah, I just want to say thank you to you and to Epic and to the radio station, to C and to Sea Legs, yeah, for the work that you do to make these opportunities possible. But that's sort of also an extension to everybody out there who, whatever their reasons are, whatever their struggles are that align, that they're in solidarity with prisoners. It means a lot because not many people are, right? And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about something that Claire Culhane said. She says, prison's the best fight in town. And I think it is the best fight in town. And I think the prison question is, I've really reflected on this a lot. I think it's a question for our time. And I think it's interesting how so many other struggles that exist out in the community overlap and are reflected back to us when we start looking at the prison and who's there and why they're there and some of the things, the power structures that exist there. So it really is something that can bring a lot of people together. So I just I want to say thank you to people who have been there. Yeah.
I just want to thank you too for always being this uncompromising voice. Like, it takes a lot of courage to speak out the way you have, and often at great risk to your own freedom or your own, you know, like, I think the consequences while you're so directly under the control of CSC could be immense. So I've always really respected the courage that you've displayed in doing that, and it's been a good ride.
Sure has. Well, we're still on it, so
it's still early.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're still creeping up the first part of the roller coaster. So we haven't even gotten on the downward swing yet. So maybe there's still a few loop-de-loops to go through.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
For I am. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Bone Thugs and Harmony. For I am. Steve Marley. Yeah. Soon I'll be coming home. Been around the world like a Rolling Stones. In the whole world wide. Through my own eyes, been a long time coming. A million miles, I'm still running. Trying to find my way back to my roots where the truth does lay at. And I say that I'm trying to go home, take me somewhere that my mind mode is on free, and my time zone is on freeze. Everything stopped. I'ma need a little bit of time to get myself together. In the meantime, my turn best to better. In the between time, try to be blessed forever. I hear home calling back for me. I think it's time I take a flight to elevate my mind and look at my life. I'm trying to get right. The big lights blinding me, they bright. I've been in darkness most of my life, so I fight with all of my might to make it back one day. Maybe someday it'll all work out some way.
Sun up to sundown, we gone. Let's catch a flight in the morn. Promise I'll make it back home. Now I'll be back with you just one day. One day. Just give me one day. One day. Sun up to sundown, we gone. Catch a flight in the morn. Promise I'll make it back home. Now I'll be back with you just one day. One day. Just give me one day. One day. Just give me one day.
From the first of the month to the rugged spawn. Every week that crossroads stayed on the billboard. Baby said Wayne made up the word blank. Man, I should have patented my whole damn flow. Sleep on the train tracks, little ain't so. Craig and I never had a place we could go. Walking around with it when we ever gon' blow. With a gun in a car, let all the wolves know. Fuck, fuck, come a nigga stuck like Chuck. 105, I bet he never miss a lunch. Granny did good, but nigga, what about us? Couldn't go home, it was too fucked up. And our shoes fucked up, but it's cool when it's rough. After that, now we got more than enough. New black gloves, two shooters in a bluff. Easy upstairs in the company's done. Tried to rob a little nigga, but the talented one. Word to the widow with white the east side. Still look young, and these niggas ain't dumb. Cleveland is the city where these bone thugs come from. Never gonna run from. No, nah, I need an earthquake show now. Hold up, my niggas don't fold up.
Sun up to sundown, we gone. Let's catch a flight in the morn. Promise I'll make it back home. Now I'll be back with you just one day.